AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Widespread devastation, trees pulled from the ground, buildings flattened after a tornado tore through parts of the South. In Mississippi,
Rolling Fork Mayor Eldridge Walker says when the sirens were activated,
my wife and I got in the bathtub and covered our heads. By the time we did that, it sounded like a train coming through the house.
He says it happened quickly, and when they stepped outside,
devastation all around.
CBS's Jennifer Kuiper tells us at least 16 people were killed. There have been three more attacks on American bases from Iran-backed forces. CBS's David Martin with details from the Pentagon.
There are still about 900 American troops in Syria working with local fighters to go after remnants of the ISIS terror network. But that has exposed them to attacks by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards.
He says since the start of the Biden administration, American bases have been attacked 78 times. Former President Trump is heading to Texas.
In an area famed for a long-ago cult showdown with law enforcement, Donald Trump holds his first 2024 presidential campaign rally today in Waco, Texas. This is multiple criminal investigations involving him intensify. A federal judge in Washington has just ordered his ex-White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, to testify before a grand jury looking at the January 6th riot of Trump followers. In another Washington investigation, a Trump lawyer testified yesterday about the Mar-a-Lago documents, while New York law enforcement investigates a threatening letter sent to the DA there, now weighing a hush money criminal indictment of the ex-president. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
A deal to keep schools open in one of the biggest school systems in the country.
LA Mayor Karen Bass announced the agreement.
Well, we've done it.
The tentative deal comes after a three-day walkout. The workers, including bus drivers, custodians, and cafeteria workers, had threatened to walk out again if a deal wasn't reached. LA School Superintendent Alberto Cavallo calls it a landmark deal.
This is a multi-year agreement, the likes of which has never been negotiated in this district.
The key part of the agreement is a 30% pay increase. There will also be fully paid health care for anyone who works at least 4 hours a day. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
We're now hearing Gwyneth Paltrow's side of the story in a Utah courtroom. She's being sued by a man who claims she seriously injured him during a crash on some Park City ski slopes in 2016.
I feel very sorry for him. It seems like he's had a very difficult life, but I did not cause the accident.
Terry Sanderson also claims Paltrow left him on the mountain without help. She denies the allegations. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you'll seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joe Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoyed by the sly, so enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be Indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
And this portion of the show was brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, tonight we got Nancy Bolio on, and I have some clips from today. I was at the Clyde Belcourt Urban Initiative, Legacy Initiative at the state capitol, and there were some serious speeches that I have recorded and that we can comment on. And so there's a lot happening here in the Twin Cities and all over Native land. And I feel like Ogama Twin Cities in a lot of ways, and Minnesota specifically, leads the way in a lot of Native initiatives. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, depending on, you know, what the initiative is and, you know, what's happening in the legislature at any given time. Minnesota, I think, is one of the states in the continental U.S. that has some of the most Native legislators as well.
Right. And then I heard today, and I think we've talked about this too, that the Twin Cities has the biggest urban Native community in the country, which I think we've talked about that, but I heard that today. So without any further ado, let's get with Ogama with the news that you don't hear anywhere else, like what I just said.
Hey, Buju relatives, this is Ogama Ganuakwe, and I'm a citizen of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota, and I'm coming to you from central Minnesota, or Minnesota, Makoche, and Dakota homelands here, and I have some news and information for you. The first thing that I want to talk about is the MN350 action that's coming up. It's Stop Dirty Banks. It's March 21st from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., and it's reminding people that banks are a huge element of the climate crisis, and there is something that people can do to stop it. March 21st, everyone's gathering outside of Wells Fargo Center in the Twin Cities to pressure them to stop financing fossil fuels. It is a part of a national day of action to end investments in fossil fuels and to send a message to the banks that are funding the climate crisis. Stop financing fossil fuels, or we'll take our money and put it in better banks. So this is your notice that if you have your money in Wells Fargo, they are financing the climate crisis. So it might be a good idea to consider a different bank. And if you are available on March 21st from 12 to 1, they'll be at the Wells Fargo Center in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. But I do believe many other places, like up here where I live in central Minnesota, they're still going to be at our local Wells Fargo. So take action from wherever you can. Speaking of taking action, I want to remind everybody to show up for the Taxpayer Protection Act on the Prove It First Day in the Minnesota legislature on April 4th, it looks like. Prove It First is wrapped into the Taxpayer Protection Act. And what it is copper sulfide mining and reminding and advocating for Minnesota and its water and people that copper sulfide mining has never been done safely anywhere. And the Taxpayer Protection Act includes language that will help Minnesota to be protected from this. So basically, Minnesota's current financial assurance requirements, basically what the state of Minnesota requires companies who are coming in to do things like mine or, you know, build pipelines, those kinds of things, are really inadequate to protect against or clean up after an environmental disaster. And this company that wants to put in PolyMet in Twin Metals also has a really terrible, terrible track record in other countries in South America and other places. And this type of mining has not been done safely anywhere in the world. So this bill asks those companies to make sure that they have the money in hand when they apply for these permits to do this mining in Minnesota. And the reason they don't have that money in hand is they're essentially piling on IOUs. And they say that they do not have to have, thanks to the Minnesota legislature, they do not have to have the money to clean up a spill until after 9 years of the mine being in development. So, or being in active. So after 11 years, you know, if the price of copper and nickel suddenly plummet or there's, you know, some sort of change, these companies could essentially pack up and leave Minnesota and stick Minnesota with, you know, billions of dollars possibly of damages that they would have to clean up. So this is really important legislation. And if you have the time, make sure to contact your legislator or Governor Walz, which you can do. Friends of the Boundary Waters has a really great and easy form that you can fill out on their website, and they'll help you submit a letter and find your representatives to be able to say, hey, prove it first when it comes to copper and sulfide nickel mining here in Minnesota. The big thing that I wanted to talk about today, though, Robert, and I am not really looking forward to it, is the IPCC, Robert, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, released yesterday that urgent climate action is the only way to secure a livable future for everyone. They said they opened up the press release with hope, saying there are multiple feasible and effective options to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adapt to human-caused climate change, and they are available now, and that we need to mainstream effective and equitable climate action, not only to reduce losses, and be clear here, losses and damages for nature and people. They're talking massive loss of human life and animal life as well, but it would also provide wider benefits. Right now, the IPCC highlighted that the scale of the challenge to keep the planet from warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius is still going. And every increment of warming is rapidly escalating hazards. And, you know, they're really kind of vague a little bit in this press release about what these things have. But to be effective, these choices need to be rooted in our diverse values, worldviews, and knowledges, including scientific knowledge, indigenous knowledge, and local knowledge. And this approach approach will facilitate climate resilience development and allow locally appropriate, socially acceptable solutions. That, I think, is what we've really been talking about. That's the meat and potatoes of what we've been talking about in the Stop Line 3 movement, in the No Dabble movement, in all of these things. Climate resilience development is about bringing it back to our communities and relying on our knowledge from our ancestors. And now more than ever, it's going to be a problem. They estimate that approximately 30 to 50% of the Earth's land, freshwater, and ocean need to be conserved right now. And that is not something that we're set to do at this time. So I really hope that there is a better understanding of the kind of consequences that we'd be facing with the continuation of overconsumption and helping to people to make more informed choices. Although as consumers, most of us, like we talked about yesterday, Robert, are not to blame. So many of these mega companies need to be held accountable for the damage that they are doing. So we've got 2 degrees Fahrenheit before we start losing a lot of people. So get with the program, everybody.
Well, hey, Ogma, thanks for the news, and also thanks for the update and reminding us all where we're at here in this climate and as a world. It's dire, and I'm glad we talk about it. So, Pini Gigi Ogama. Hey, up next, Nancy Bolio, Bemidji 350 and MN 350, talking about the climate and what we're doing here. So, again, thanks again, Ogama, with the news. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Ho-wa.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Jenny.
It's up to all of us. It's not just up to Democrats. Are we ready to rid our country of this perversion and deception? You know, are we sick of massacres at churches, grocery stores, theaters, concerts? Are we sick of adults forcing children who are raped into pregnancy? When is enough enough that we're going to vote all those fascists?
I'm putting you down for Caller Hall of Fame today. We have to carry these messages, even if the Democratic Party is incapable. You keep it up, sister.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Weather brought to you by Nextech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nextechglass.com. That's nexttechglass.com.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. A winter storm warning continues until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Cloudy today with snow likely. Highs around 36. Northerly winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, lows level off around 23. High of 43 tomorrow. 3 to 5 inches of snow today with another dusting Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic, honoring health and tradition.
Very good. Yes, they do. Thanks, Ogama. Hey, we have Nancy Bolio on the line. And Ogama, I wonder if you could take over for just a second here. I got a hungry dog here that won't stop barking.
Sure. I'm going to touch base for just a couple more seconds here on the IPCC to kind of, condense it for people. The world is likely to pass the dangerous temperature threshold of 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Fahrenheit within the next 10 years, unless nations drastically transform their economies and immediately transition away from fossil fuels. And this has been one of the most definitive reports that's ever been published about climate change from the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And it warns that once we are beyond that threshold, which is expected to happen in the early 2030s, that the climate disasters are going to be so extreme that people will not be able to adapt. And they're expecting heat waves, famines, and infectious disease that could claim the lives of millions of people by the end of the century. So this is what we're up against right now when we talk about climate change and rising temperatures. So I don't know. Do we have Nancy on the line with us already?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Hey, bonjour, Nancy. Welcome to Native Roots Radio. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be here. And right in the moment, I am calling in from a sugar bush camp just 2 miles from my home, pretty much in my backyard on some ceded territory in 1855, treaty lands. And again, I'm close to, you know, the Turtle River, and this is a sugar bush. And why we're here, you know, you were just talking about climate change, and we're in an area where there's mature maples. They're 40 years old, and there's all kinds of different, you know, trees and life and medicines in this forest. And we have to, you know, understand that, you know, it's not just fossil fuels, pipelines and those kind of things, but when we cut the trees down, cutting down forests to create farms or pastures or for other reasons causes emissions, since trees, when they are cut, release the carbon they have been storing. So since, you know, the forests absorb carbon dioxide, destroying them also hurts nature's ability to keep the emissions out of the atmosphere. And, you know, when you talk about that, those diseases, you know, deep in the layers of our ices and all, you know, the permafrost, all that stuff holds diseases, bad things. And once everything starts melting and creating all these floods and all these bad things, those new diseases are going to be introduced to us today, and we're not going to be ready for that. And so we're kind of holding space here in sugarbush because we feel we have to save the forest to protect our way of life. You know, sugarbushing is a part of who we are. And again, it's part of climate change, just cutting this whole forest down. And so we're here again holding treaty space in a good way. And tonight will be a second night of camp. And yesterday DNR showed up and tried to confiscate our bags and make us leave, but that didn't happen.
Right on, Nancy. Hey, thanks, Ogama. We've got a new medication on for our dog, and this dog is like telling me he's hungry at the craziest times. Thanks again for being on, and Ogama, thanks for stepping in. Maybe you can let our audience know what sugar bushing is, because I think a lot of people out there, our allies out there, don't know what that is and how deep that runs in our traditions.
Yeah, that's people have been doing it for thousands of years, and our maples, and you know, this is the new year for us, and so nature will bring us some gifts in this season, and one of those gifts is the maple syrup, and we'll tap the trees when the temperature is somewhere between 18 and 20 during the night, and when the temperature is above freezing during the day, that's when the syrup comes out of the well, it's not syrup, but it comes out of the trees. It's actually liquid like water, and we collect it, and then we bring it into camp, and we obviously do all that prayer and good stuff, and we boil it down to syrup, and we can make candies and, you know, mix berries in with it. There's just so many ways our people rely on the maple syrup. And yeah, in this forest, a lot of these trees are about 40 years old, and to cut them down would be just something horrible. And in this particular part of the place that we're camping in is part of the migration story. So this is a heritage site, and we're actually on state land. And so when DNR was here yesterday, he reminded me we were on state land and we needed a permit. But I said, no, I'm 1855, don't need one, and I have a right to be here. So he made some phone calls to some higher uppers, and then in the end, he left on good terms. But I think they know we know our rights, Robert, because he said after speaking to the higher uppers, we may or may not be back, and he gave us our tapping bags back.
Wow,
and it hasn't been back since.
Yeah, Nancy, just imagine if you didn't know about the treaties, that, you know, one of our young ones that might not be adapt to that or apt to that treaty, and then they would have just gave up their bags and went home.
Yeah, that's what one of the gals was saying as I was walking in this morning. She said, I'm so glad you were here, because if it was me, we probably wouldn't be here right now. So, you know, again, this goes back to, like, one of our elders always says, what good are our treaty rights if we don't assist them? And, you know, there's so much healing in the woods. It's just the sense of community and all that good stuff, you know. And, again, if we don't go back to our ways, we won't find that healing. And it's also an excuse for these departments, you know, like the forestry department and the DNR, to say, hey, they weren't tapping them anyways. Go ahead and buy them and cut them out, you know. So, again, it's up to us to be out here to do this and do it in a good way. And DNR said yesterday, he goes, what are you guys here to protest and get a citation? And I said, no, we're actually here in a cultural way. This, we're supposed to be here. I belong here. And you have no authority as DNR to interpret those treaties and tell me I can't be here. So he hasn't been back since. So we've been here a full day with no one out here harassing us. And back to the DNR, I told him, if you guys quit showing up and harassing us and giving us citations, we wouldn't be getting citations. And no, we're not protesting. We're here because we belong here. We have those rights. So they want to, you know, like deem us, or, you know, protesters, so they have an excuse to ask us to leave. So it's about how you show up too, Robert. You got to show up like that, they say.
Well, right on, Ogama and Nancy. I mean, talk about demonizing us. And that really sounded racist to me in a big way about, oh, you're going to protest now because, you know, we're telling you to, you know, unplug these trees, and or are you protesting now? That sounds terrible here.
It is. And actually, you know, the good news is we got the Leech Lake DRM on our side. And if there's some discussion that maybe at some point they'll bring out a permit for us to be here. We're not supposed to accept a permit. And yeah, we just have the support of the Leech Lake DRM. And then our tribal historical preservation officer will be out to, you know, take a look-see and see what's out here, and write a report to DNR to say, no, that you can't do this. And again, it's back to that trust responsibility on behalf of the government. And exactly. We trust that they would take care of these things. And signing those treaties as Native people, Robert, our ancestors signed those treaties to protect our way of life. And what good is any of that if the fish are poisoned and there's no more forest and no more medicine, no more Manoomin? What do we do?
Right. You know, Nancy, before we get going here, there's Allison that asked a really great question. How can this not be part of their training? I mean, again, and that goes back to education, how they want to whitewash our education about what's happened to Native Americans in my lifetime, in your grandmother's lifetime, Ogama's grandfather, or father and grandfather and grandmother's lifetime. I mean, how can they not know this stuff? And I think Nancy went.
We might have lost Nancy. Hopefully she joins us back. But I mean, I think that there's you know, even more rapidly than people are realizing. I think that there's generations of even Native people who are growing up who don't have, like, my grandmother was part of the boarding school era, and I heard some stories from her, and I know that you're part of the 60s scoop, Robert, and I think that the next couple of generations behind us, they're growing up sometimes without those stories of how those things happened, and what we really lost. And if we don't tell them what was lost, then they don't know, you know, what to fight for. And I think that it's really important that we keep telling those stories and keep reminding our youth and people that are just now coming to the way to keep fighting for it.
Absolutely. Wow. Great comment. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about what happened at the Capitol. We're releasing Nancy from the rest of the show because she's working hard with the Sugar Bush. And we're going to talk a little bit of what happened at the Capitol today. And I got some clips I'd love to have you, Ogama, and I talk about after we listen to them. So, hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Tornadoes ripped through the South last night. At least 24 are dead. Eldridge Walker is the mayor of Rolling Fork, Mississippi.
EMS is busy and there are a lot of folks who are injured.
The tornado left widespread destruction, crushing buildings and power lines. A federal judge has ordered some of those closest to former President Trump must testify before a grand jury about the attack on the Capitol. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
This investigation is going to the next step. And former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows will have to testify, unless an appellate court overrules this, to what his interactions were with Donald Trump on January 6th.
Gwyneth Paltrow in a Utah courtroom telling her side of the story after a man sued her for running into him on the ski slopes back in 2016.
Who hit who?
Mr. Sanderson hit me.
Sanderson claims he suffered brain damage from the collision. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Hey, sis. Missed you this morning. Kim told me you weren't feeling well, so I'm just doing a self-care check.
Oh, thank you, friend.
How you doing?
Girl, listen, my energy was so low because I didn't eat breakfast when I got up, so I had to miss virtual yoga with y'all.
Trust me, I understand.
But I'm doing much better now that I've eaten, so I'm back on track.
Great. In that case, let's get some steps in tonight. I'll come over and we can walk around the lake.
Sounds good. Appreciate you being in my business, too. Now, let me get in yours. Did you check your blood pressure today?
I did that and my squats, okay?
Okay.
High blood pressure is not going to be my friend if I can help it. See you at 6?
Let's get it. See you then.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Check in on one another and be a part of a healthy blood pressure movement. Rally Your Squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Bijou, I am Oshawashko Gijig. I'm from Red Lake Nation, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by the Native American Community Development Institute.
Hey, you faked me out there. I thought you were going to go with Howling for Wolves. I was getting ready there. Hey, Ogama, I just got to tell you a quick couple things here. I was at the Capitol today, and it was the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative, and it's a collective of 16 Native American nonprofit organizations in the Twin Cities. And it's focused on issues ranging from healthcare to housing, workforce development to childcare that have provided our communities with powerful and effective services for decades. They're seeking $136 million, and that's for all these 16 organizations. And there was a rally, there was a press conference. So I have. I have a clip here I'd like to play. The governor spoke to everybody, and I'm going to play that clip if you don't mind. And then we can kind of comment on this. It's kind of interesting for a couple reasons, but let's listen to it, and then we'll comment on it, Ogama.
That this has not always been the friendly place. This has been the place that worked against you and your people. This is the place that made it difficult for you. This is the place that passed laws that tried to make sure you were not part of Minnesota. And I think the acknowledgement of that is the very ground floor of where things start. What you're here for today is saying, yes, we know all of that. What we want to know is, what are we going to do about it today? What are we going to do to deliver on projects that improve the quality of life for our children and our people? What are we going to do to make sure that opportunities are available truly for all Minnesotans? What are we going to do to provide the resources necessary, whether it's around homelessness, food security, whether it's dealing with an opioid epidemic and health disparities that impact indigenous communities at a rate 7 times higher? And so coming as a coalition, and just to be clear, state of Minnesota is working really hard to work with our 11 sovereign nations on government-to-government relationships. But I recognize the group that's here and the coalition that's been built is a recognition that Minneapolis and St. Paul specifically have one of the largest urban indigenous populations in the country. And services that are rendered at the tribal nations are different than services delivered here. And this is nothing new. For the past 50 plus years, the organizations that are represented here have done that. I hope that my message this year would be a little different. Folks have come with things to advocate in the Capitol for years, and they come with things that they know need to be done. They know things that are popular, and they run into roadblocks where it ends up looking like you brought a wish list rather than a to-do list. So when you bring projects on bonding bill and they total $136 million, you're not just making up a number. You've decided that these are projects and vetted them that make a difference. So I want you to know, we have proposed $2.3 billion in a bonding bill with $200 million of that specifically on equity for communities that have not been able to be a part of that. So as you're talking to legislators, and again, I will tell you this, we had an opportunity last week to pass a bonding bill. We weren't able to do that because that takes a supermajority. Well, we will just simply pay for it, and if you don't want to support it, we will have the votes to pass it anyway, because these projects are too important. So, as you're here with a historical expectation that this building will not deliver for this community the way they should, I understand that. I think the only thing that will change that perception is actually getting these projects done, of actually seeing money go to reduce homelessness, to tackle some of the issues. That is the thing. We have gotten by in the past by simply acknowledging our issues or acknowledging a problem. It has become a real problem of admiring the problem without putting up specific solutions. And I can tell you the last thing you need is to have someone not from the community, old white guys here, determine what the community needs. Those never work. Those never work. What works is the ability of what we're doing and doing it with our tribal nations. We did this during COVID, and I'm going to do it again around housing. Direct appropriations to the communities that can make the decisions necessary to improve lives. Those are the best results we get. Those are the best results. So I want to thank you for being here with your advocacy. I want to thank you for sharing this land that we all stand on, understanding that we are going to undertake some of these things, whether it's indigenous education for all, so that all of our children, my children, your neighbor's children, understand the true history of this. And then we are going to correct. It's my expectation that we are going to pass legislation to transfer the Upper Sioux State Park, which was a location of pain, anguish, and death for the Yellow Medicine people. Our goal is to, with the help of the federal government and the Interior, transfer that state park to the ownership of the Yellow Medicine people to honor their land the way they need to. Any help on these initiatives would be appreciative. We know that this is going to take advocacy from all of you. It's going to take advocacy from the governor and lieutenant governor's office. It's going to take the work with the legislative leaders. But we know this is the right work to do, and I've said this and I'll continue to say it. If our indigenous children and our indigenous families are doing well, everybody else is doing well. So the issue on this is making sure that we truly honor a One Minnesota, really honor a history that we need to tell that has not been positive for everyone in this state, but with concrete steps to improve on that and move forward. That's what you're here for. Here's the good news. We got 7 weeks to the end of session. We can truly make transformational change in 7 weeks, and our kids can't wait another year. Our families can't wait for another legislative session. This is the one. So thank you all.
Wow, Ogama, your thoughts. I like the term, he was saying that one of the things about our history and education needs to be taught to everybody, not just to ourselves, but to everyone in the state. That was pretty right on. And then also, it's an old Paul Wellstone kind of a comment, if we're doing well, everyone's doing well kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you on the education front for sure. And I think that that would go, honestly, like the furthest in how people know, interact with, and understand Indigenous peoples in Minnesota and elsewhere. And I'm kind of navigating academia right now. I'm in college again, and I'm finding that, I took an introduction to education course, and they covered education broadly in the United States, starting from the 1400s going all the way forward until present. And, they covered segregation and all of those types of things, but they completely skipped over Native boarding schools as if that was not a part of the history of education in the United States. And it most definitely is. And when I implored to talk to my teacher about it, they basically said that if I wanted to know more about it, that I had to take a Native American studies class. And I just don't think that that's really in alignment with what we need to be doing to educate people, in the state of Minnesota, to be good relatives to all types of people here in Minnesota.
Well, come on, that statement there, we could have a whole show on what he said or he or she said to you. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And to just fail to make that connection, that it's common sense. It's an easy connection to make that boarding schools are part of the history of education in the United States, and that Native people are part of the history of the United States. And they tend to just continually erase us and continue to do that harm. And when we take the effort to put Native American information into curriculum alongside, you know, all of the other curriculum that they're talking about, you know, then it doesn't become this painful separation, and we can actually move forward, you know, to healing and to making these things happen. So I think ultimately that would do the most work. And see, Allison just said too, I never heard about boarding schools when studying to become a teacher. It's awful. It is. It really is. And I don't know, Robert, if you got any of that training when you were teaching.
Heck no. But what I want to say too is, you know, I had a friend of mine reach out to me about, was it okay if he did a land acknowledgement? And I said, dude, the land acknowledgement's for you. We already know this is like, for instance, Minnesota's Lakota, Dakota land, and Wisconsin's Ho-Chunk land, and, you know, Ojibwe up north. But so it was kind of a funny conversation, because we've had that conversation here many times, that we know from our history, from stories, from who we are, what we've gone through, a lot of us, and I'm still learning, it's our white allies that need to know and that need to step forward too, because we're only a small percentage here in the state, like 3%. I know they always say 2, but I say 3 just to throw it up there a little bit. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, being a Native person and those kind of ongoing harms that we experience, you know, on a day-to-day basis, that's part of it. It really is.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny, too. I know somebody that has a younger sister, and they're in their 20s, and their younger sister's just graduated from high school. And and she looks more white than her sister, you know, same parents, you know, just the way the gene pool popped out. And she can see how people treat her sister differently. And I know you talked about that too in the past.
Yeah. You know, growing up, my sister is, looks a lot more Native than I do, and she experienced a lot more, you know, direct racist comments from people, and I kind of got the indirect, you know, people assuming that I agreed with them about, you know, those dirty Indians or whatever comments they had.
Yeah, exactly. We can jump in, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that after our break. I also have another clip, but I think we've kind of hit on something, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about the governor of Minnesota's speech. All right, so hey, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
This is Rocker, and I bet you didn't know I was a realtor. Come down to my open house tailgate party, 8 to 10 Saturday and Sunday mornings in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point. Enjoy donuts from Zippy Lube and coffee from Ford Craft and Coffee, and let's talk strategy before you head into battle. Find your glory, create a battle plan. Enjoy coffee and donuts every Saturday and Sunday morning in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find us on Facebook or weikert-lakepoint.com.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. By the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article in the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music, and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Weather brought to you by Next Tech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nexttechglass.com. That's nexttechglass.com. Shaw.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A winter storm warning continues until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Snow likely today, otherwise overcast. Highs around 36, northwest winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Mainly clear tonight, lows dip down to about 23. More clouds than sun tomorrow, high of 43. 3 to 5 inches of snow today with another dusting Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, everybody. This portion of the show was brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Howl!
Howl! Right on. Hey, it sounded good with just two. That was awesome, Ogama. You know, let's jump a little bit back into what you were talking about, because I think that we were just at the end of the break. You know, it's interesting, you know, TV shows, movies, you know, people masquerading as a different race, seeing how people are treated in a different way. But again, it sounds like you and your sister really lived through that in a real way.
Yeah, we did. Like I was saying before the break, my sister looks a little bit darker skinned than I do, a little bit more native than I do. I'm, you know, effectively white passing in a lot of situations. And she experienced a lot of direct racist comments, you know, words that I don't want to repeat on the air. And I experienced a more kind of indirect, you know, comments about, you know, oh, you know, kind of whispering under your breath about the Indians and not really realizing that I am one, which is always fun as somebody who can be like, and that's me. So why don't you tell me again what you have to say about them, and just kind of watch the, you know, all of the color drain out of their face. But another thing too, when we were little, you know, my dad was tall and dark skinned, had tattoos and all those kinds of things. And, you know, we used to go to like our local county fair here. And when I was a kid, there wasn't that many Native people around town here. And they certainly probably didn't go to the county fair very often. And I remember thinking that he was magic, because people would just get out of the way. I'd be holding his hand and people would just move. I didn't realize how I was in middle school, that is, because people were afraid of him. They were afraid to speak to him, or that he was going to, you know, do something. And here he was, you know, with two little girls, one on each hand. And it's just it's a strange realization to have, you know, as a young person, that people are afraid of you.
Yeah. Wow. I'm chewing on that. That's really interesting and really, I don't know, really personal. That's that's crazy.
Even now, my husband has some of those same reactions sometimes when we're in public, too, for reasons that we can't always put our finger on. We had one really bad experience at our local Target where another man was, you know, kind of getting in his face. He was silently just staring at him and staring him down, and we couldn't figure out why. And when him and his partner left before us, and we waited back a few minutes to, like, come out of the store. When we came out of the store, he was in his truck waiting for us to come out. And my husband is a larger Indian guy with long hair, and he's never been in a fight. He'd never hurt anybody. And he kind of froze. And it was me that, like, I had anger in my heart. I yelled at the guy and told him to leave. But I mean, you know, I had anger in my heart for him, because, you know, what are you doing? What right do you have to make us feel afraid? You don't have that right. You know, whatever it is, your problem is with us, take it with you and go, is my thought. And, yeah, that's Angie Vig just commented. She runs Big Guitars, and she said, when someone says I didn't look Native, I would just respond with, why don't you draw me a picture of what I'm supposed to look like? And that's exactly it.
You know, that's kind of in the same thing we were talking about, Ogama. We were talking about, I don't know if we were talking about it on the show, but we talk about Native artists, and then that's not Native art, because there's not a teepee or a eagle drawn on it. It's like, no, this is a Native person that does art, so that makes him or her a Native artist. So it's all these preset notions that I think, you know, Generation Z doesn't have, you know, whether it's with gay people or you know, or two-spirit people or trans people or, you know, marriage, all these things that my generation and somewhat your generation, I mean, you're a lot older than you look, not a lot, but you're older than you look, but, you know, that somebody like Zoe's generation really doesn't have to deal with it, at least in the progressive areas. I don't know what's happening farther, the farther away you get from tall buildings, but, you know, that's my perspective right now, Ogama.
Right. Well, and, you know, I've in my area, we've actually kind of had an influx of people from the Twin Cities. I'm about a couple hours north of the Twin Cities. And after the riots that followed George Floyd's murder, there was a pretty large influx of people who were moving into this area and quote unquote away from social justice. And many of them, you know, consider themselves to be progressive, you know, allies, but they didn't want to stay. They didn't want to stay, you know, when the fighting happened, when the rioting happened, when those things happened. They weren't on board for that when it threatened them, you know. And it's really hard to say you're a good ally when you run at the first sight of danger and you're not there with those, with the people that you claim allyship with.
That's kind of like what we used to call people chickens.
Yeah. I have feelings for that. You know, I have young children, and I couldn't imagine the trauma that they would have gone through and that our family would have gone through had we been in the midst of those riots and those kinds of things. But I mean, I drove into it to be there to help at the American Indian Center, because it's important to me, and, you know, would do it again if I wasn't currently a food source for my youngest. So that may change in the next couple of years. But, you know, people do a lot more with their actions than they do with their words. And, you know, getting back to what Governor Walz had to say, I really, really hope that the actions line up with the words this time. And that, you know, we see those working together. We see those people advocating for this, and we see that work happening at the legislature to get these organizations funding in the Twin Cities, and hopefully they're able to take some of that funding and, you know, branch out into the wider areas of the state.
Yeah, it's 16 groups and they have 14 projects, and a lot of it, or most of it, is here in St. Paul and Minneapolis. But, you know, I heard some personal stories of people getting help from these organizations, homeless people, all these things that, you know, if the natives are running it, they're being, one of the things the governor, I'm again paraphrasing, had to say was, like, if the natives are working on native problems, they'll get done. It's not somebody that's out of the community that's going to fix it, you know, or what we always have issues with, and is what is it called, white you know, savior. Yeah, thank you, white saviorship that sometimes ekes in, and life is full of boundaries. So, you know, that's an interesting thing, Ogama.
Yeah, and, you know, it's good that we have allies, and it's good that we have people who are advocating for our rights as well, because a lot of times as a Native person, they don't listen to us, but they'll listen to other non-Native people. So we need our allies. We need those people to help raise and amplify our voices as well. But we also need them to understand, you know, when it's appropriate to step back and let us take care of our own business, because we know how to take care of our people better than anybody.
Right. And that's all the way from touching somebody's hair to, you know, powwow etiquette to we're not a bunch of savages getting drunk all the time and powwowing and 49ing and all those things. Ogama, great show. Your insights are always so valuable and important to this show, but also our community that listens to us. So I got to give you a big hoo-wah. Hey, all right. Hey. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office, and I'm adding vote. You know, I know, make voting a tradition. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier now.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new...